Talking Ball. What was that you said?
Texas Talking Ball.
Gonna hoop upside your head.
Texas Talking
Ball. Tell me, who can you trust?
This is Joe Bailey Jr.
And I'm Steve Mims.
We're filmmakers in Austin.
We just optioned the rights for the feature film version of the Tribcast.
So far, we've attached Ryan Gosling to play Reeve Hamilton,
Kyle Chandler for Ross Ramsey,
Tilda Swinton as Emily Ramshaw,
and the part of Evan Smith will be played by Dame Judi Dench.
We're looking forward to award season.
Have a great Tribcast.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for the first week of September. I'm joined by executive editor Ross Ramsey, as played by Kyle Chandler.
Howdy.
Wait, I'm sitting in Evan's seat and I don't get to be introduced first?
That's right.
Okay, go ahead. Introduce her first.
I thought Ryan Gosling was going to be hosting this Tribcast.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I'm acting. It's method acting.
Hey, guys.
Tilda wants to go first.
Emily Ramshaw, the editor, is here.
Hello.
And Judi Dench, instead of playing Evan Smith as usual, will play Morgan Smith, Texas Tribune reporter.
You have to say this Hello. In a British accent to do
yeah,
it again.
Yeah, you got to do a whole British accent the whole time.
Hello.
Hello.
We're going to just call you M from now on for the rest of the...
Yeah, I think it sounds like you being played
that
by Dick Van
initial.
Dyke.
Right. You're going to start dancing with penguins in a minute.
Let's get back to the important news of the week, which is Governor Rick Perry's Twitter account.
Yeah, right.
I think.
The single most important thing.
This caused a bit of a splash. Can someone tell us why? This is like a quiz show.
Sure. On Sunday evening, while I was, you know, drinking at a party,
TMI.
Suddenly I got a text message from Evan Smith that said, "Have you seen what Rick Perry just tweeted?" And so, of course, I looked at Rick Perry's Twitter account, where he had tweeted some picture that was a picture of Rosemary Lemberg that was a
Rosemary
meme.
Lemberg is the Travis County
Travis
DA.
County District Attorney. If you don't know what this is by now, you better not be listening.
Should we try to do it quickly?
Pled guilty to drunk driving.
Right. Perry tried to push her out, and because
and
of the actions involved in that, he's been indicted. Is that fair?
Yes.
That's fair.
And the meme, the picture that was out, basically was a play on the Dos Equis man, the most interesting man in the world, and it had Rosemary Lemberg, you know, saying, I don't often have X number of drinks and blood alcohol that's three times the legal limit, but when I do, I indict Rick Perry, which... A, isn't factually accurate by any
she
stretch of the imagination. Right. But B, it was a pretty wild thing for someone to be tweeting who has been indicted. And so everyone suddenly quickly said, what is Rick Perry doing tweeting this? Within about an hour,
apparently Rick Perry was thinking the same thing.
Right. Within about an hour, Perry had tweeted, you know, something was retweeted from my or tweeted from my account that I didn't authorize.
Right.
But the interesting thing about this is that Rick Perry has been very public about the fact that he and only he mans his Twitter account and that he's a tweet, you know.
So it must have been a woman.
Yeah, right. But that he's a big tweeter. And so this should come as no surprise.
Are you laughing
at
the phrase?
She just called the governor tweeter. A big tweeter. Yeah.
Big tweeter.
No, that's something that's come up before in political campaigns. I think almost a year ago, Abbott retweeted someone calling Wendy Davis abortion Barbie. Barry Smitherman tweeted that picture of a noose.
Right.
You know, previously. There is a risk involved when you're, at least the public perception is that this Twitter account is manned by the principal.
The lesson here is the most dangerous job in American politics is to be the intern on a campaign, because eventually this is going to roll downhill to you. Somebody's going to blame the intern. And Perry said somebody in my campaign did this, you know, in the same way Abbott did. Oh, I didn't do that just because it's under my name on my account.
Yeah, is it a...
And it's probably right. Somebody else, you know, I mean, it's
that's you got to hope he wouldn't be that dumb.
I mean, I think Tribune staff members have accidentally tweeted from the Tribune account. They're including Evan Smith.
Yeah, Evan tweeted a picture of like Derek Jeter at a Yankees game. Derek Jeter's butt at a Yankees game or something ended up on the Texas Tribune Twitter account.
I think that's actually Evan's sort of secret Twitter handle.
What?
Derek Jeter's butt?
Yeah.
Right.
I'm glad they don't give me access to the Tribune Twitter account.
I'm glad too.
Yeah. Is there anything to be really read into here? Is it a difference?
No, it's just entertaining.
If he's the one that tweeted it or if it's a staffer, you know, The politicians are not the ones that actually type out their statements usually.
It doesn't make any difference, but you're going into a presidential campaign and you got to get this stuff locked down. You got to, you know, he's not in a position to make mistakes and people say, well, he's new at this or blah, blah, blah. He's in a position where he has made a mistake in a presidential campaign and everybody's waiting for him to make new ones. So they're amplified to begin with. And the danger is that, you know, if you stack up some things like this, I'm not putting too much weight on this particular tweet, but if you stack up things like this, all of his opponents can go, the guy doesn't know what he's doing.
The straw on the proverbial camel's back.
Well, the camel's getting tired here.
Yeah. And I think we've exhausted the topic as well.
There's not much else to say about it. Yeah. It was just
entertaining. It was a little flurry on Labor Day.
It seems like there could be some better memes to come out of.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't the most clever joke.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Like, maybe use cats next time.
You do something inappropriate. Right. You might as well be good at it.
Exactly. Make it funny. This one was just wrong.
Yeah. Speaking of wrong. Actually, I don't know where that's going.
Yeah, right. Be careful here.
Right. The other big political story of the weekend was the back and forth about whether or not Wendy Davis and Greg Abbott will ever be having a debate.
The debate over the debate over the
TV. Basically, I think on Friday, Abbott pulled out of a planned debate.
Well, sort of. I mean, you know, what happened was Abbott went to WFAA in Dallas and said, you know, I've agreed to this format for a roundtable debate. There were going to be some questioners. I was going to be one of them. There were going to be some questioners and the two candidates, and they would be able to interact some, like a roundtable. And they had agreed
to this.
Well, right. There's a good argument. and the Abbott people had actually, in their letter accepting this, been sort of complimentary of the format and saying, you know, that's a good way to do it. I don't like those timed things. And they didn't want any
raising your hands to signal yes or no.
Right. They came back to WFAA.
I don't know what that means.
They came back to WFAA and said, we'd rather have a more classical debate with timed answers, timed responses, and no interaction between the candidates. And WFAA said, no, we're not going to do that.
This is after what changed?
Well, nothing. I mean, they just came in.
They previously agreed.
It was all set up. The date was set. The time was set. The stations were lined up.
What was the date going to be?
The 30th of September. So the day after the lieutenant governor's debate. And they came back and they said, you know, change the format. And WFAA said, we're not going to change the format. And the Abbott people said, if you won't change the format, we're going to pull out. And they said, okay, bye. So Abbott pulled out, accepted another debate on the same date sponsored by the Dallas Morning News, Telemundo, KXAN,
KERA, NBC5, right. The Dallas Morning News. It's a long list of
So they took another debate on the same date. And after some back and forth and some, you know, debate, the Davis campaign has said, okay, we'll go to KERA.
I think their acceptance was a little bit snarkier than that. It was sort of
It was quite snarky. But this is one of those things. They're arguing over something most people don't really care about.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty tedious.
Voters want to see candidates compared so that they can compare them. And they, you know, want to see the differences if they can get to it. But the arguing over, you know, what shape table and what kind of microphones and, you know, the format and all of that is, like you say, tedious.
I mean, did WFA think that they were going to be able to hang on to this debate, or were they really ready for them to leave if they didn't agree to the format?
I don't know what their thinking was. They obviously acted in a way that showed they were ready to
stick
to the format rather than
right. Interesting. But didn't Abbott have a change on his staff? You know, did he get a new debate advisor?
They brought Robert Black in, who's been around for a while. In fact, Robert worked on the first Abbott campaign for attorney general against Kirk Watson and has been an advisor to the governor, he's a old hand in the Republican Party, worked at RPT, the Republican Party of Texas. I think the Abbott people are looking at this as probably a lot of front runners would, saying, you know, all that can happen to a debate – to a front runner in a debate
is something bad.
Is something bad. And right. so let's minimize the chances for something bad. And they looked at this format and said, you know, a lot of these debates have turned into shouting matches and we don't want one of those. You know, the debate between Dewhurst and Patrick and the debate in the campaign before that between Dewhurst and Cruz, both of those turned into, you know, like it was a hockey scrum.
Those both WFAA debates.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's largely personality based and sort of foreseeable with those people. And I think with Abbott and Davis, you're not likely to get that sort of level of volatility, perhaps.
We've never seen Abbott in a debate. I mean, there was one debate. He's done one debate for public office that I'm aware of with Kirk Watson. It was a half hour almost nobody saw it who was paying attention to that race, much less voters that year. And, you know, so I don't know what Abbott would be like in a debate at all. Davis, we've seen a little bit just because she's been on the Senate floor, you know, in that back and forth. But I don't know what they'd be like on TV.
Do you think this was an unforced error on the Abbott campaign's part, or a show of a lack of confidence to just suddenly pull out of one debate and then move into another debate on the same night?
I can't imagine I can't imagine this turning any votes.
Both of these campaigns have tried to really control their candidates and media access to their candidates, and this to me just seems like another example of that from the Abbott campaign.
Plus, you know, it's not like this kind of stuff trickles down to voters. I mean, does this make Abbott look maybe, you know, like not the most trustworthy among, you know, members of the media who set this stuff up? Sure, it looks squirrely, for sure. But to voters, I mean, is it squirrely to voters?
No one's paying attention to this.
No one's on the fence being like, well, I really wanted the guy who would debate on WFA.
Yeah, right, exactly. I think that if he'd pulled out of the debate altogether, any debate altogether, and said, you know, I'm just not going to debate her, I think, you know, I'm not even sure that would make any kind of noticeable difference.
But it didn't for Rick Perry. You know, right. Rick Perry wouldn't debate Bill White. They finally ended up doing 1-hour interviews.
Right, back-to-back interviews.
So I guess Rick Perry never initially agreed to debate him, right?
Right, they have that letter from the Abbott campaign manager saying, like, yeah, this debate's great.
Perry said he would debate White if White would release his income.
Mark Miner sent out 160 emails daily.
Right.
But does it put Davis at an advantage? Because like I said, her acceptance of the debate was sort of like, oh, we will agree to this debate if it makes Abbott more comfortable because it's less challenging, and, you know.
It doesn't do anything for her. She just needs a debate. She needs any debate. And she's going to get two.
Because they had that other one that stayed the same.
The 19th, September 19th in McAllen. It's the one that's going to be live streamed. Well, on our site, but also at the Texas Tribune Festival. God, I sound like Evan. If you want to come, there are still tickets available.
At Telemundo and the McAllen Monitor are among the sponsors. I'm not sure that's all of them.
Right. So there will be a debate. So that in some ways that will be their warm-up round probably for the big televised one.
So for all of those voters who never watch debates, there will be two debates, not to one.
So but that debate is being televised.
The second one is being televised.
The first one's not being televised, but it is being live streamed.
I think the first one is being televised locally. Regionally,
well, yeah. And the Abbott campaign's calling both of them statewide televised campaigns. So I think Telemundo may be sending it, or debates
rather. A broader
signal.
But either way,
you'll be able to see it.
I mean, Wendy Davis needs these debates just for the opportunity that something might happen that will cast Abbott in a negative light and make her look good.
The same thing happened in the lieutenant governor's race in a much quieter way, but it's the same kind of thing. You know, Dan Patrick, who clamored for as many debates as he could possibly get with David Dewhurst when he was not the front runner. Mm-hmm. Now that he is the front runner, is only acquiescing to one debate with Letitia Vandeput, who wants to have as many debates as, you know,
evenly
there
possible.
Are weekends between now and then.
And that happened in the runoff between Patrick and Dewhurst, too, when Patrick started withdrawing or not showing up at planned appearances with Dewhurst.
Right. Dewhurst
when
was
also the front runner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You also have Sam Houston, the Democratic Attorney General candidate, out there saying, like, where is Ken Paxton, his Republican rival?
Today.
Who's basically
right.
MIA on the...
And we asked Paxton's people, the story just went up, we asked Paxton's people if they were going to agree to a debate, and they sent back a statement that did not say one way or the other whether they were going to agree to a debate. I would not be surprised if there's no debate.
What did they say? Thank you for your question.
It was something along
we enjoy
the lines
debates.
Of saying that, you know, their Democratic opponent's call for a debate was just, you know, a ploy to make himself not look like he was so low in the polls and... blah, blah, blah. So there's, but you know, you can't really blame these guys. If you're the front runner, there's no reason for you to participate in a debate. It can only do negative things to you.
Well, but, sort of. I mean, you know, one argument is if you're in a campaign, all you're trying to do is win. And so you're looking at all of this as either I take a risk because I'm behind or I don't take a risk because I'm ahead. Mm-hmm. If you're in this, you know, sort of if you're in your civics textbook and you think that voters ought to actually have a choice. Or if you think that you need to go before voters and present them with some ideas so that if and when you're elected, you have something you can actually realistically call a mandate, then you got to get in front of the voters at some point.
And
at the ballot box.
Well, no, I'm talking about you've got to present them with an idea.
Yeah.
I mean, Abbott could win this race. I mean, he's actually running the kind of campaign that he could win this race without ever having really presented an idea to enough voters that a person on the street could say, oh, yeah, I voted for that guy because he's going to do X. Mm-hmm. And he's going to go to the legislature in January and say, I want to do X, and the legislature is going to say, where's your mandate?
Well, so that's what he's preparing to lay out at his two debates. In the meantime, he's also preparing – his office, at least, is preparing some appeals for some cases that they have lost recently, I think.
A lot of them.
Can we start with the school finance?
We can.
Suit. That's been going on forever.
Yes.
And ever and ever.
Something finally happened in it. So what was the setup and what occurred?
So this lawsuit arose after the 2011 legislative session when lawmakers cut about $5.4 billion from public education. But this is something that's a perennial occurrence in Texas about twice a decade. There's this kind of massive school finance litigation where school districts get together and challenge the state in the way it distributes money to schools. And so we had a trial that lasted for about 45 days, 2 years in October 2012. Then we came back after this last legislative session in 2013, had round two. And last week, Judge John Dietz, an Austin trial court judge, finally released his ruling, which was included about 400 pages of legal findings of fact and was across the board in favor of the school districts. And this was something that was very much expected was going to happen. So,
because he had already ruled this way before in just fewer pages?
Right. He never issued an actual on-paper ruling. He just read a statement from the bench at the conclusion of that first trial. And so we didn't know the details of it, but we knew the gist of it.
The Dietz tales.
Good one.
I hope that's the last time we hear that joke.
And yes, the state is appealing this case. It's probably going to be directly to the Texas Supreme Court, though we don't know for sure. And the earliest, if everything goes as fast as it could, the earliest we could have an opinion from the Texas Supreme Court is next fall. That's what I've gathered from talking to the lawyers.
So you could go straight to the Supreme Court. There doesn't have to be an appellate court in the middle here.
I think if you get a chance card, it's straight to the
yeah. There's Supreme a legal court. Maneuver that they can use to take it straight to the Supreme Court, and then if the Supreme Court then decided to expedite the hearing, then it would kind of jump in front of all the other cases, and we could maybe have oral arguments starting in May at the end of this next legislative session.
You couldn't do it this year?
From what I've gathered, you could not.
The year's pretty much over.
Just because all of the briefs that have to be filed on both sides, and yeah.
So could lawmakers do anything, really? Between now and then?
Sure.
Or you mean
they
on this
write,
thing?
They have to write a budget.
Or just generally.
In general, yeah.
Well, they have to write a budget in 2015, and that budget, you know, sort of inherently contains a school finance formula. And
right.
They could rewrite it. They could look over Dietz's shoulder and say, you know, change this, change that. In fact, they tried to do a little bit of that last time.
Right.
Is it possible to say what exactly he says the state is doing wrong or unfairly?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's pretty explicit about what's going wrong in the way that the state distributes money to schools. And it's not just because there's not enough of it. It's just there's inequities in, you know, which school districts get what. The state doesn't know how much it costs to educate a student. That hasn't been studied since the 80s. It doesn't know how much it costs to implement these new academic standards in schools. So there's any number of things I think that could be chipped away at legislatively. But, I mean, as we saw after this last legislative session, it's still going to occasion at least another go-round in the trial court, even if, you know, lawmakers came back and said, hey, we want to fix this thing. We don't want a Supreme Court decision to do it for us.
I mean, in theory, you're likely to have a governor who, Greg Abbott, who tried to get this judge kicked off of this particular case, right?
Right.
So it's unlikely to me that a potential Greg Abbott as governor would say, legislature, let's work together and come up with some kind of solution that makes Judge Dietz happy.
Right. And also the state could also just decide not to appeal and say, hey, we're going to let this decision stand and, you know, lawmakers, this is your mandate. That's also not going to happen.
Right. Right.
You just leave it up for the next attorney general to deal with.
I mean, is this something like redistricting where in the end lawmakers think it's just easier to let the courts figure this out?
Yeah. You know, what happens here is that, you know, one of the things that he said in his ruling was that the state has set a standard for public education in Texas and not given the schools enough money to reach the standard. So as a political matter, that means that, you know, you have to go back to your voters and either say, I'm going to lower the standard for the public education system you wanted, or I'm going to raise your taxes and spend more money. And, right. and it's easier to do that with a judge twisting your arm.
So do we have any sense of whether or not the Dietz thing, let's say they do appeal it, would his ruling get overturned or would it be upheld? Do we have read on the Supreme Court?
I think if you look back at the last time the court ruled, which was in 2005, it was also a Dietz wrote the opinion in that round of the litigation, and they upheld in part and overturned in part. And I think, you know, school district lawyers are hoping that this time around, everything that they upheld in Dietz's opinion has just gotten so much worse, and they've made an even better argument for the things that weren't upheld in Dietz's opinion. But there's also been a lot of turnover on the Supreme Court since then, too. So I think that, you know, it's anyone's guess. And obviously, it's a much more conservative court than you're going to find in Travis County.
So are charter schools now out of this altogether?
Charter schools are, I believe the charter school organization, and there's another group that's not a traditional school district group. They were both the judge found against their claims in the lawsuit, but they are going to continue to appeal. So they'll continue to have their issues kind of aired out in court. So they're appealing on that side as well.
He also said, though, that the charter schools that were in districts that had unfair funding also, as a result, had unfair funding.
Right, exactly.
Right, so if it was disequal in the public schools in a particular area, it was disequal in the charter schools in the same area.
Yeah, all public schools, including charter schools, are underfunded and equitably funded. But these other policy issues that the charter school organizations were pushing for, Judge Dietz said that that's something that the legislature should determine. It doesn't violate the Constitution.
Well, let's talk about the other case.
Abortion.
Mm-hmm. Right. Take it away, Emily.
Yeah, right. So basically the House Bill 2 from the end of the last session, which was the measure that would have required Texas abortion clinics to meet the standards of ambulatory surgical centers, that was supposed to go into effect basically, you know, the start of September. And so abortion providers, reproductive health clinics were in court trying to prevent that from happening. The judge in this particular case, as was anticipated, I think, largely, said basically that this legislation was not constitutional, that it was, I think he said burdensome in a way that was incompatible with the personal freedom and privacy of women in Texas. This would have basically taken the number of abortion clinics in Texas, there are about 19 of them, down to just a handful. So obviously that was his ruling. Greg Abbott's office and Republicans in Texas, you know, were outraged, saying this is a political court and that they are moving on now to New Orleans, where the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals is. And that's the more conservative court. You know, it's still questionable what that court will do. That court has had some mixed rulings on these issues, but everybody expected it was going to go to that court.
Well, and burdensome is sort of a tough thing to gauge, right? One person's burdensome drive is another person's.
Right.
Country, yeah, so
Edith,
Sunday drive.
Edith Jones on the Fifth Circuit Court in an earlier version of this case said that, you know, driving, I think she was using 200 miles, driving 200 miles for something like this is really nothing in Texas. People are used to that.
Right.
I mean, she really, you know, just basically said that. Lee Yackel, who did this ruling, I should say, was one of, was appointed to three different courts by George W. Bush. Mm-hmm. He's a Republican.
So why was this ruling anticipated then?
I think just previous rulings out of, you know, out of this court.
The same judge, yeah. The same judge had ruled against an earlier version of this law.
Right.
And so is this ruling basically pushed back the implementation of
So this ruling,
HB2?
There is currently now this measure, HB2, will not be implemented, you know, until there's another court ruling. Abbott's office had asked the Fifth Circuit, you know, quick, can you at least make a ruling so that we can, you know, keep this in place? In the meantime, we can institute this legislation, start shutting these places down. And the Fifth Circuit said no, rejected that request and said, y'all are going to have to wait until we take this up. So for the time being, there are some clinics that were slated for closure, that including one in McAllen, that are now going to keep their doors open as they await the next round.
But if they... Can they keep their funding coming if their futures are so uncertain? Could they start shutting down even as they wait?
I think, you know, for a lot of these places, it's really just they can pay their bills if they have women who they're seeing. And so there are still several clinics that have shut their doors. The whole women's health clinic in Austin, basically wasn't able to do it, lost their lease and could not proceed. But there are a couple of clinics that are going to be able to stay open as a result, particularly in areas of the state that were so underserved that women were going to be driving hundreds of miles otherwise.
Does it hurt Abbott at all to have two sort of high-profile losses going into his, campaign for higher office?
They're both still under appeal. You can say we're still fighting. Right. This fight's not over. We lost a round. That happens. The fight goes on.
Plus, I think anytime the decision comes out of a courtroom in Austin,
exactly,
it's seen as
they pretty much vilified Austin.
People seem very willing to buy into
with the Perry indictment stuff. Even so many of these judges were appointed by Republicans. They're Republican judges, and yet that decision's coming out of an Austin
Travis
court.
Travis County.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
The tomato soup.
The Democrats and the Davis campaign in particular are, of course, making a big deal out of these and saying, this guy keeps losing lawsuits and, they've got a record to show.
Right. Although it's not like Davis's campaign of late has made, abortion legislation the center of her campaign. And so, I think you saw some statements from her around this. But I don't think she's necessarily using this out on the trail in a big way.
They're not focusing on the substance of the...
Exactly.
Which is... it's not even the. I'm surprised that her book is coming out, and it doesn't even, the title doesn't say anything about standing or anything that sort of doesn't seem to be focusing on anything she's associated with.
Yeah, somewhere in a parallel universe, this candidate is running only about the issue that got everybody excited in the first place, but not in this particular universe.
Boy, that book is about to come out, and I was really hoping that cover that got leaked was just a rough draft. Instead,
so it's just rough.
It is like bright blue and in the worst font you have ever seen. Yes, it looks like a 7th grade PowerPoint presentation.
It's called Forgetting to Be Afraid, which is also an interesting title.
Buzz marketing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any other final thoughts?
None.
Tilda says none.
She's an intimidating presence, Tilda Swinton.
She's a woman of few words, unlike yours truly.
Well, we could have used a few more. We're coming in short time-wise.
Do your best Ryan Gosling impression.
I have been.
Oh, that's what this was this whole time?
Whole thing was. Well, we'd like to thank Shiny Ribs for doing our music, which was excellent as always. And on behalf of Morgan, I'd like to encourage you to send your questions and comments to tribcast@texastribune.org. And on behalf of Ross, Emily, and our producer, Todd, I'd like to thank you for listening in the first place. This is Reeve. Thanks for listening. Texas talking about Texas talking, baby. Texas talking about it. Texas talking, baby. Hey, Joe, I think we have to do that again. You have to be a little tighter on your, a little faster on the space between the lines.